This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
If you want to be awe-inspired, ladies and gentlemen, and let me just tell you that those of us who do not believe we are divinely created, let alone divinely supervised, are not immune to the idea of awe and beauty and the transcendent. Let me invite you to look for a moment at the pictures taken by the Hubble telescope. Some of you may have done it. If you haven't done it now, but yet do it soon. The extraordinary revelations of swirling, yet somehow beautiful new galaxies in color and depth and majesty, like nothing I think the human eye has ever seen. Turn away from that if you wish, and gaze at a burning bush in an illiterate desert part of the Middle East and say that that's where revelation is. I don't believe you'll be able to do it. Or read a page of Stephen Hawking on the absolute magnificence and consistency and underlying beauty. As Einstein says, the great miracle of physics is there are no miracles. It all carries on holding together all the time. There are no interruptions in its order. There are no suspensions of it just to please Joshua, just to please some sect or tribe or group. No, it's much, much, much more impressive than that. Hawking has a colleague who looked at the event horizon of the black hole. If you could travel towards a black hole, not yet possible to do, if you could, in theory, the event horizon is the point at which the black hole is pulling everything into itself. So over into the black hole goes light itself. It's so strong it can pull light back into itself. It's really awe-inspiring. A lot more, say, than a crowd of pigs infested by devils running down a hill into the sea, which is a piece of sorcery, cheap magic of the sort that shouldn't impress any thinking person. Think about a black hole instead. Pulling the light into itself, the event horizon just reorganizing nature. So that if you could get to that lip, the lip of that event horizon, and fall in, go in, you could in theory see the past and the future stretching before and in front of you. You would see time, except you wouldn't have the time to do it. Of course, if you were a mere primate, as we are. But Hawking has a colleague who says if he knew he was dying of a terminal illness, that's how he'd want to go out, over the lip of the event horizon. That would be majesty. That would be magnificence. That would be awe-inspiring. That would be incredible. So it's in the natural world. It's in the world of science and the world of innovation and discovery and doubt. We wouldn't have discovered any of these things if we'd taken the religious story for granted to begin with. We would have said we already know enough. We know. God made this. God wants it this way. What's the need for inquiry? We already have all the information we need. The big difference between this side of the house, mine, and the other, is this. I am absolutely certain that I do not know, but that it might be possible to find out, and that doubt and skepticism and innovation and inquiry are the only means by which wonder and beauty and awe and symmetry will be discovered. And beyond those peaks we can yet see, new, more wonderful peaks will rise. Whereas, on the Wilson side of the house, it is said, we already have the certainty. We know that God created us, and we even claim to know his mind. I and what he wants of us. And I just invite you to open your minds to the possibility that the skeptical and the inquiring and the doubtful will be better than anything that calls itself faith. If anything that calls itself faith calls itself certainty. And for certainty, I think there is no place in an institute of intellectual mentation and higher education. And I'm very grateful to you all for giving me the chance to say so.
And welcome, everybody.
I feel like we should start every show like that, Steve, because I feel motivated to take on the world right now.
Yeah, I looked in my throat. That's really emotional.
Sometimes we get emotional. It's not very often. But, you know, the Hitch is just one of those people that no matter what side of the fence you fall on or whatever you believe, he just enchants you, right? I mean, you just want to listen to what he has to say. And he says it so eloquently, something that I don't do. So, yeah, I agree that it would be nice to have something by him maybe every so often. Sure.
And something certainly that I don't do. I have this very thick, definitely country accent. And even if I had the most eloquent sentence ever written, it would just sound like crap coming from me. So, I mean, I'm screwed either way. I'm in awe of this man in every way.
You need to go live in England for a while. That way you get the accent.
Really,
yeah.
I don't think it would fit me though. Like, I can't picture.
Have you tried?
But I don't think I want to either. It
you don't
it would be very
awful. English.
It's true. But enough about me. Welcome everybody. Today we are. I decided that yesterday. I was actually finishing up this book. If I can find it. Here we go. This book called "The Faith of Christopher Hitchens," which is. A fantastic book. My green screen is kind of cutting off Hitchens' head, but it's by Larry Alex Taunton, and it was a friend of Hitchens. This guy's a Christian, and wrote about Hitchens and his, I don't want to say morality because it doesn't paint it like that, but it paints Hitchens in a very good light from a Christian aspect, which I think is very interesting, especially since he was so, you know, vehemently against it. But they had a really good friendship. And that got me to thinking that I remember Mortality coming out in August. And I was like, wonder what that date is. And it happened to be today. And I was like, oh, this would be something really good to do because I've always wanted to talk about Hitchens in its, you know, its own personal, like, stream. And this kind of just was like in a nice, pretty package. And carrying that package with me are... Steve, of course. Dave is here, as always. He's on camera today. So, hi, Dave. Welcome to welcome to the limelight. How do you feel on this side? Is it different?
I don't usually go on camera anywhere, so it's kind of weird being on camera.
Yeah, you're on camera tonight, and I'm off camera tonight, so it balances out, yin and yang.
We can have both of you. It's in our contract.
It would break the internet.
And we are very happy to have three fantastic guests with us. Two of them have actually been on the show before. And actually, no, all three of you have been on the show, just not in person, Tony. You came in video form, correct?
Yeah. In the roasts.
Speaking of voices, now I'm going to be jealous all stream long because literally the voice of God is here. If you watch Prophet of Zod, the man who does the voice of I have Hitchens and I have Tony Reed. I did not think about this before I scheduled this. Nonetheless, welcome, Tony. And Emperor Atheist, how are you doing, man? Welcome back. I think you're muted.
Oh, yeah, I was muted. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on, man. Absolutely.
And one of our favorites. Back for the fourth time, actually. This is you're a four-timer now. I don't know if that's a good thing for you or not. For us, it's a great thing. For you, I don't know if you want to tell people that you're a four-time appearance on this show, Lloyd, but nonetheless, welcome back.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I love this channel. I love the audience and how engaged the audience is. So I'm really thrilled that you could have me here. I'm a huge Hitch fan. And I kind of became aware of him after he died. So this is the closest I get to kind of a Hitch pilgrimage. So I'm very grateful.
Oh, very cool. I'm the same way. I didn't know about him until after he had already passed through. But actually, and we'll talk about this in a second, but Emperor Atheist met him, met the man in person. So that's really cool. I can't wait to hear about that. I was getting ready to do the shows that we have coming up, but we're not going to do that today. So we're actually going to go back to these guys and let them plug their channels and let you guys know where you can find them. Because usually my go-to is the upcoming shows, and then we let everybody introduce themselves. But I forgot that I scrapped that. So it's Saturday. We're not used to streaming on Saturdays now. I'm used to just sleeping all day. So bear with me, audience. We'll get through it, I promise. Tony, let's go back to you then. Let everybody know where they can find you, social media links, anything you want to throw out there, and that way people can be doing that.
I'm really bad with social media. I'm trying to develop it, but I do have a Facebook page called How Creationism Taught Me Real Science. And although you can probably find my channel, read easier, it's much easier to just look up the show, How Creationism Taught Me Real Science. That's my YouTube show. I'm at 80 episodes right now, and I've got about 50 episodes for next season ready to go. So I'll probably be at 100 but certainly by this time next year. And that's essentially my show. In case you aren't aware of it, I take creationist arguments seriously enough to actually fact check them. And what a surprise, they're almost always misrepresenting the science. And that's the big thing.
What's that's just crazy talk. Yeah, I know. Really? Tell us all about that, because that's news to me.
These are the honest people.
He's also an amazing roaster. If you and I can't remember if it's this Tuesday or the next, but he will be in the finals of the atheist roast battle, which
semifinals. Last time. If you haven't seen,
is it? And I'm one of the judges. That's probably semifinals. I have too much going on. He killed last time. You go to the Godless Geeks channel and watch the. It was him and Godless Iowan on the last round, and he brought it. He brought it. It was pretty intense. So welcome, Tony and Emperor Atheist. Thanks. You have a hot new show. So let everybody know what that's about.
Yeah. We got a show, me, Nate Brody, and Dragnaut, called Three Black Heathen Show. If y'all haven't checked it out, since atheism is still, it's bad to say, but it is what it is. It's still kind of like a goal at the end of the rainbow for blacks and minorities. So we're just trying to basically touch more minorities. You know what I mean? We're trying to get some black Christopher Hitchens and some guys so our people can get out this damn religious, strut that they stuck in. So, and also my show, the Emperor Atheist Show, man, y'all come, check that show out too. So just trying to normalize atheism, fight against basically religious bullying in the spirit of Christopher Hitchens, man, because I love that guy. So I had, when I seen you posted, I said, man, I got to get on this, man, because I love the Hitch. I actually met him in 2007 at a debate. He was debating one of my co-professors, by the way, at Emory Theology School, Kendall School of Theology that I attended. And yeah, he destroyed him. But I mean, Tim was a good sport. Tim said he loved me, wanted him back. This was in 2007. And he came to Atlanta. And actually, my cousin, matter of fact, y'all can go get that clip. It's a real clip. It's not one of his more popular debates. And a lot of people talk because it was a small audience, but I happened to be there and actually met him and hugged him. But my cousin, Cynthia Tucker, who was actually an editor for Atlanta Journal-Constitution, knew Christopher Hitchens through journalism. She told me he was going to be there, and I had just heard about the guy through her, matter of fact, which she's still a Christian, but she told me about him and how he speaks and how he writes. And that's how I even got introduced to Christopher Hitchens through her about 2005, 2006. And I started following the guy, and that's it. And I went to that debate.
Well, beautiful debate. I'm actually glad you're here, because if you weren't, it would be the five white heathens, and we can't have that. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. And last but not least, Lloyd. the Jehovah Witness Hammer.
Wow.
Is that my official title?
Yes, after the last debate that you had on here, yes, absolutely. It was he was like fun. Christopher Hansen. You know, like Christopher Hansen on To Catch a Predator, how he comes in and he's got this he does interviews like a scalpel. He's like a surgeon. You know, you don't know why he's cutting here and here, but when it's all said and done, the whole thing just falls apart. That's how he did this guy. I mean, it was kind of magical to watch. But anyway, go ahead.
Hey, Lloyd, real quick, can you say have a seat here for a moment? He does. Catch a Predator. Just have a seat here.
Have a seat here for a moment.
You know when you hear that, you're fucked, right?
No, that guy. That guy actually.
Those are the scariest words ever.
He actually talked to me for like 2 weeks after that on Discord.
He's been trolling me on Twitter for quite some time.
He's trying to get me to go to Jehovah's Witness. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm. Yeah.
Go ahead,
well, they're like that. Anyway, I have a channel called the John Cena's Channel, and on that channel I talk mostly about Jehovah's Witnesses, but I try and talk a little more generally about cults and creationism as much as I can. I try to interview people. I've had Matt Dillahunty on the show. I've had Yasmin Mohammed on the show. But I have my work cut out because Jehovah's Witnesses, especially since 2014, have been pumping out a lot of video propaganda. They produce hours on hours of it, and I take it upon myself to issue rebuttals to that propaganda. So a lot of my work is purely about picking apart some of the manipulative crap that they throw at 8 million Jehovah's Witnesses around the world. And I've also written a book called The Reluctant Apostate. So whatever takes your fancy, but you will find me on the John Cedars channel.
And you will find a wealth of information. The one thing I can say about him is that he is like an encyclopedia for all things Jehovah's Witness. And can rattle it off like it's nothing. So if you think that if you're a Jehovah's Witness out there, that thinks that it is a good. It's a good thing now in the.
It's good for my line of work. It's good for my line of work, but a lot of what's in my head is completely useless outside of this very niche sphere. So I have a whole bookshelf full of books that have been printed by Jehovah's Witnesses going all the way back to the late 1800s, and it's basically nonsense from beginning to end. But it's important to know this stuff when you're in the business of trying to persuade people who are totally locked into the religion. If you're trying to persuade them and you say the slightest thing that might sound just remotely wrong or ill-informed, immediately your argument collapses. So I kind of need to know it.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that what you know is not useless because it, especially in that. That's kind of sect of religion. You know, religion as a whole, I think, is a bad thing. But the sects that kind of branch off from like main Christianity, I think, can be dangerous. And what you do in probably the countless people that you've been able to bring over to the other side, I think, is priceless. So, the knowledge that you have definitely is changing lives in a positive way. And you probably even lives, you know, because they believe in. You know, the whole blood thing that, and if you get out of that, then I'm sure you have a halo. If God actually does wind up existing, I think you're fine. So,
I'll have to stop saying these things before my head explodes.
did you guys notice the guy when you'd have that debate against a witness, he didn't really contradict anything you had to say. I mean, he realized everything you were saying was completely true, which was unusual, right? So he even admitted you knew exactly what you're talking about. What's that?
Yeah, I had to educate him.
Yeah, that was kind of the interesting part. You knew more than the actual member of the Jehovah Witness.
Let me get my board here. Now, Dave, on that video, basically what we're going to do here is going to be very, it's not structured at all. I have probably 20, 25 of Hitch's greatest lines. And the total video spans about 11 minutes, so it's not like a you know, 11 things. But we're gonna, I'm gonna break them up into three parts. So we'll do like three of his best lines, and then we'll switch it over to one of you guys. You can tell either your story, your quote, and then I've got your video links that you guys sent. That's your favorite like Hitch moment. We'll play that, and then we'll kind of just have an open talk about that. So feel free to jump in anytime. It's there's no structure. I just thought that it would be kind of cool to have people who appreciated. Like I know me personally, it's how I got to doing what I'm doing now. I stumbled upon Christopher Hitchens doing a debate. Now, me, I would have never been interested in debates whatsoever, especially on the level that he did before I found him. But there was just something about him that he was right in what he was saying, and he was doing it in a way that was hard enough to know that he means business, but eloquent enough to not come off as some kind of, you know, just pompous asshole. Like he was genuinely, you could tell he genuinely was concerned about what this does and the ramifications that it can have. And his, like, I don't know what it was, but it just sucked me in. And then now I sit here. If I had never come across Christopher Hitchens, I would not be in front of you today. And I know some of you are probably wishing that I had never come across Christopher Hitchens. So sometimes me too. So, sometimes me too, but
I'm very glad you did.
I am, you know, and I am too, because I think he helps atheists in a way that it's like you look to him in an argument sometimes. I know me, like if I hear something that like makes me curious or whatever, the first thing I do is I always see if he had a point about it, because the way he was able to, like I said, you know, kind of span things in a way that sounded just phenomenal. His wording was just, I mean, there was just nobody could hold a candle to that. But his passion, I don't think is unmatched. It's lacking now, I think. I don't think there's anybody that's kind of stepped into those shoes. And I think that's a shame. But I mean, how can you fill Christopher Hitchens' shoes? So we'll start with the top three, or the first three, let me put it that way. Dave, that's going to be 1A, B, and C. And then see if anybody has anything to say
about
it.
As a Sufi Muslim, I'm very ruffled by the title of your book. Of all the titles that you likely had at your disposal, did you have to settle for the literal negation of Allahu Akbar?
Yes. As I've said, I think that all religions are wrong in the same way, in that they privilege faith over reason, but they're not all equally bad in the same way all the time. I mean, if I'd been writing in the 1930s, I would certainly have said that the Roman Catholic Church was the most dangerous religion in the world because of its open alliance with fascism and anti-Semitism, which the damage from that our culture has never recovered from and never will. But at the moment, it's very clear to me that the most toxic form that religion takes is the Islamic form. Because remember, Islam makes one special claim for itself. All religions claim to be revealed truth. They all are founded by divine revelation. But Islam rather dangerously says, ours is the last and final one. If you remember Dick Gregory, the older comrades here will, great black comedian and civil rights activist, when he came to write his memoir, he called it nigger.
Right.
It upset a lot of people, including his old mum, who called him and said, why are you doing this? And he says, mama, every time you hear that word again, they're selling my book. So every Allahu Akbar reminds people that we're in a very serious struggle with a very depraved religion.
Do you believe that that God, if he's provided everything for you, has rights on your life?
No.
Because?
Why should he? What gives him this right?
Because he owns you. He's created everything for you. He's kept you alive.
I don't want to be owned, and I don't recognize anyone's right to own me.
So ownership is a bad thing?
Of people, yes.
Oh, okay.
It's been widely considered. I mean, I know the Bible does call for slavery, as it calls for genocide, but that doesn't make it right.
Christopher, have you ever prayed?
Once for a hard-on.
Okay, stop right there.
Haven't we all?
That's not a quote.
His quick wit was just something. So feel free to jump in if anybody has anything to say on those three points. And if not, we'll jump into your personal.
Well, the wit is there. but also yeah. he was, you're there showing him in this very potentially difficult situation where he's being confronted by someone in the audience who is Muslim and who takes exception to the title of his book. You don't see him give an inch in his reply, but he did like you were talking before about how sincere he was. We have so many people in the people in the public realm who almost delight in shocking people for the sake of shocking people, who delight in offending people for the sake of offending people. What Hitch was saying to that person in the audience was offensive to her, but he was being sincere, and he was stating his opinion in a very forthright way that you couldn't really argue with, and that was kind of his signature.
I like the way the guy was talking about Allahu Akbar, which means God is great in Arabic, and how he, his book, when he wrote his book, God is not great, and like my man just said, he wasn't scared. Hitch never showed any fear of whatever you would call Islamic fundamentalists or their attitude towards him. He would speak the same way against a Muslim, the same way he would speak. He was equal opportunity employee on actually destroying all ignorant, arguments for God. And that's what I loved about him, because, and like you say, he was real quick. It's another thing you just said too, Kyle, that's very important. I'm not going to say it's a bad thing because it is what it is. Like you said, no one at this particular time has actually just came and filled that spot. And maybe that's a big spot to fill, because you just don't see that type of debate skill, right now. It's a missing. Definitely,
it's the combination. It's the combination of the intellect. There's lots of people who probably have a comparable intellect, but it's the combination of the intellect with the oratory skills and with the wit. That's what I think made it unique.
He also had a method of being provocative in the way he spoke, and yet without too much hyperbole.
Right.
That's a good point.
So let me ask about the first clip. When he's talking about Islam, and he kind of notes to Islamic eschatology, and I'm sure that Emperor Atheist probably knows quite a bit about this. But what do you think about the notion that Islam is actually a little bit more dangerous? Because Christians, they believe there's a second coming, but they don't believe that they can facilitate it that much. But when it comes to the 12th Imam, there are some radical Islam people that believe that can actually, by bringing forth blood, shed, and chaos, help facilitate that second coming. How much more dangerous do you think that is?
Well, this is the thing. And Christopher used to make this point when he spoke about Islam throughout. I don't know how many debates y'all have seen of Christopher. I've probably seen each and every last one of them. But a lot of times
I'll tell you my favorite one at some point in this.
He always made the point. And he was fair. Because a lot of things, like you say, he was genuine and he was fair in his deduction of a lot of things and the way he saw things. He said that Islam at this particular time, which we're talking about in our modern era, he says it's probably the worst when it comes to fundamentalist ideas and religions. And I agree with him on that. He said Christianity had that time. We know the Catholic Church, through the Inquisitions and all these different things. But when you think about it today, when you look at Islam radicalism, which a lot of the ulama or the Islamic Jews try to separate from Islam. They try to say, well, no, the radicals are really different. The Quran doesn't teach that. Well, that's not quite true. The eschatology of the Quran, the interpretation of the surahs and the ayats of the Quran, it actually does teach this, along with what they believe in called the Hadith, which is an extra teaching. So I have to agree with the Hitch on Islam being open for interpretation to kill people who don't agree with you. I mean, I could name ayahs right off the top of my head that teaches this. And so in this day and time, even before September 11th, when you go to like you said about the 12th Imam, those are Shiite. The Imam is a sect of Islam, which we call Shiites, but it's different sects of the Shiite. You have the Quraysh Shiite. You have the 12th Imam Shiites. You have the those who follow Fatima, which is a so-called sect of the Fatimid dynasty. But in this present day and time, Muslims will kill you. You know, they will kill you if like even a Muslim who's coming out to even reject it now, to become an atheist, that is worthy of death in Islam. That is worthy of death in their particular law, in their jurisprudence. So I would have to say he's correct. Islam in this day and time is probably the worst when it comes to disregard for life, disregard for anybody who disbelieves in Islam and who talks about the prophet. You can't even draw a picture of Prophet Muhammad. We draw it up. You see all type of jokes about Jesus. Yeah,
that's a bunch of Shiite right there. That is a bunch of Shiite right there.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen too many Christian groups going to kill or shoot up something because you made a joke about Jesus. But this will happen in this day and time, Steve, about that Prophet Muhammad. So it's just the truth.
So it's not like that.
Why is that supposed to work so much?
Go ahead, Lloyd.
I was just going to say it's important to note, though, that not all Muslims are looking for blood. And I think it's something that we can be thankful for and where we're trying to work with more progressive people who identify as Muslims and ex-Muslims who are trying to kind of figure out a way of neutralizing this threat. If all Muslims were fundamentalists, we would probably not be having this discussion right now. So that's one thing we can be grateful for. But you're absolutely right. And Hitch was right in saying that currently Islam is the biggest threat. In the 40s, in the late 30s and early 40s, the Catholic Church was the biggest threat because of the way it had got its claws into fascist regimes and was therefore able to project its ideas on a much larger scale. It's a similar situation today with fundamentalist Islam and the way it is able to manipulate governments and political parties to achieve its radical aims. That's what's worrying for me.
Yeah, well, I would say, what worries me, what's disappointing to me for them?
Sorry, Kyle's breaking up. Kyle, you're breaking up a little.
Well, I was going to say.
Go ahead, Tony.
All right, what I was going to say is that what's disappointing for me about Islam is that there was a time when the Western world, which was all mostly Christian, was going into the Dark Ages, and the Muslims were maintaining all that knowledge that the Greeks had and that the ancient Vedas and Hindus had gained, and they added to it. And then all of a sudden, around 600 AD, they just plunged themselves into their own dark ages, which they have not quite gotten out of yet.
But don't you think there's something to be said by the fact that Islam is one of the very few, if not the only religion that I think of, where something as innocuous as drawing something like Muhammad will end up in, them trying to kill you. I mean, look what happened with Charlie Hebdo. I mean, there are not just a small amount of radical Muslims. It seems to be a bigger group of radicalized Muslims that are in the world than they're kind of putting out. I mean, obviously, Lloyd, I agree with you. There's obviously moderate Islams. I mean, that's no question, right? But there is still a very big percentage of Islams in the world that will kill you for having a different belief. That is unacceptable under any standard. Muslim.
Hey, you know what, Steve? And I do agree with him too. But when we use that term, like I say, when we try to separate and try to say, I won't say it's an excuse, but when we actually try to separate and say, well, the fundamentals are over here, the radicals are over here, but we do have good Muslims. I mean, that's true with any religion.
Of course.
But the thing
if
about
we didn't have good Muslims, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I assure you,
we'd all be dead by now.
And we should be thankful that we have good Muslims.
Well, I won't say that. I mean, I'm not going to be thankful for some religious group people who decide to be moral. I'm not going to be thankful for that.
I'm not saying you need to thank them. I'm saying it's a good thing.
Right. Lloyd said it could
be
worse.
Not everyone.
I think they should thank themselves for just being moral. But I think that they should do more. They should speak more out against those who they consider their brothers and sisters. Who follow the same rites and pray five or more times a day than them. I think they should do more to speak against it. I don't think they don't. I think a lot of them are quiet. I mean, and you know, when we talk
I'm here to tell you as someone who was raised in a cult, that it isn't always as simple as saying you need to do more. You need to speak out against your leaders. When you're literally being threatened with death for apostasy, which is the case in a lot of Islamic countries. It isn't always as simple as saying you need to do more to change your religion, because some people just want to get from one day to the next in one piece.
That's the problem
of religion.
This is an enemy that will kill themselves in order to kill you. I mean, that's the scary part.
Yeah.
They're willing to kill themselves to you.
But it's bad enough, like Jehovah's Witness, the worst that can happen is they excommunicate you, and then you get shunned by your friends, your family, anybody kind of like put you to the side. But I've never heard of Jehovah's Witness going out there and saying, hey, you've left the church, we're going to kill you, kind of thing. But if you apostatize from the radical Islam world,
for some people death is preferable to being shunned. Some people commit suicide because they have been shunned.
Yeah, oh, of course they do. Oh, and, oh, it's emotionally traumatizing, I'm sure. There's no question about that, sure.
Yeah.
Because we have we have quite a lot to get to. I want to go ahead and move over real quickly, just briefly, over into our first personal clip and story, and we'll start with you, Emperor Atheist. You can set up your clip, and we'll play the one that you sent me. And if you want to, just kind of set it up for us. What are we going to be watching, and why do you like it?
This particular clip, because of the moral argument, I think now, within besides people, besides presuppositional arguments and cosmology arguments, I think the moral argument is such an argument that Christian apologists use today, Islamic apologists, and the way Christopher, man, the way he just kind of just destroyed the moral, and he was talking to Frank Turek, by the way, the guy who's been running from your show and my show. And it was a debate between him and Frank Turek. And Frank Turek, every time he can't answer a question right, he goes to raises his voice and he gets mad. And Christopher Hitchens always make his temperature rise. And just the way he answered the question on morality, I mean, I don't know if anybody else could have answered it like that. I mean, and had the patience that Christopher Hitchens answered dealing with morality. So when y'all see the clip, then we can actually explain,
Yeah, it is a good answer.
It's a great answer. I love it.
All right.
Let's see with the.
If God does not exist, why do all people have a fixed moral obligation to love and not murder?
This is actually how molecules in motion
have any authority to tell you how to behave. When you do something wrong, whose standard are you breaking? Who are you displeasing?
The carbon atom, the benzene now.
What?
Yeah, we can't hear him.
Oh, I apologize. Let me fix that.
Oh, that's okay. Nobody's missing anything right now.
Everybody else,
you've got hundreds of Turek phones that'll be outraged at this.
No, Frank is basically just asking. We don't even need Frank, really. He's asking where you get your moral compass from. The regular stupid stuff he always asks.
I fix.
Where you get your moral compass from? That's basically what he's asking.
Yeah, he's like,
here we go.
Where does it come from? All right.
Molecule who?
This question has been asked. Socrates answered it like this when he was on trial for his life. Accused of blasphemy, by the way. He said that he had an inner daemon, was the way he put it. Not demon, a daemon, a spirit, an inner critic, a conscience would be one way of putting it. And that he knew enough to know, even when he was making the best speech of his life, that if he was making a point that was somehow dishonest or incomplete or shady, the daemon would tell him, yeah, that was clever, but you shouldn't have tried it. He knew. Okay. Any person of average moral equipment has the same knowledge. I hope you'll... If you don't, I'm very sorry for you. Adam Smith called it the internal witness, who we all have to have a conversation with all the time. It's been C.S. Lewis decided to call it conscience and to attribute it to the divine, but he didn't improve on what Adam Smith said in The Theory of Moral Sentiments or what Socrates said when standing trial for his own life. It's been sometimes colloquially defined as, why do people behave well when nobody's looking? I don't believe there's anyone in this hall who doesn't know what I mean by that. Why, when it won't do you any good, will you decide, I could have kept that wallet I found on the back of the cab seat, but I'm not going to. I'm going to turn it in. I'm going to find its real possessor. There are people to whom those thoughts do not occur, who are deaf to that idea, who only think of themselves, who wouldn't worry about the internal daemon or censor or or companion. And there are, of course, people who only get pleasure from being unpleasant to other people and inflicting cruelty on them. The first group we call the sociopathic, and the second group we call the psychopathic. And they occur in nature and in society. My only problem is with those who think that they're all made in the image of God. The one explanation that absolutely doesn't work at all, that gets you nowhere, that explains nothing.
We do not get it from Big Brother.
Good point.
If we did, okay, that would degrade it. It would mean it wasn't heroic. It wasn't brave.
That was it, right? Emperor Atheist, that was the point you wanted to make there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, in the end, what he was saying, there's a lot of points he made. But basically, the one he said, if you got it from Big Brother, or like Steve, me and Steve went back and forth the other day, which was beautiful, Steve. We talked about the sky.
I love talking to you on this stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And that was fun. I'm going to tell you that.
I love talking to Emperor Atheist, whether you agree or disagree. Huge fan.
And did you see how many people we got in on that conversation, though, Steve?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's amazing when you start talking about certain things, people just dive into it, right? It's like, okay.
Yeah, I'm curious. But let me pull the panel real quick while we bring that up. Let me pull the panel. Lloyd, Dave, and Tony. Because I know where Steve falls on this, and I know where Emperor Atheist falls on this, let me ask you guys, what do you feel about atheists that use the term sky daddy in any of their, whether it be rebuttals, arguments, whatever you want to take? About the term sky daddy, what's your general feeling about that word?
I don't have a problem with it. I think if you can use it with a twinkle in your eye and maybe a little grin, acknowledging that it's probably going to wind up some religious people who take their faith very seriously. But that's what God is when it comes to things like morality. You are essentially saying, I'm going to do what's right because I'm afraid of what daddy will do to me if I don't do what's right. And another way that they think of God, of course, is as the answerer of prayer. Sky Daddy's going to swoop to the rescue and fix things for you just because you've made the correct prayer in the correct way. I can understand why some people would find it objectionable, but I actually think if you can use a little bit of humor with it, I don't have a problem.
All right, Tony, what's your feeling on it?
In and of itself, I don't have a problem with it. I do think that, kind of building off of what was just said, is that if you're actually trying to win a debate, that might work. If you're actually trying to talk reason to somebody, that's probably not going to be very effective.
Yeah, so just use it in mockery terms.
It really depends on what your goal is with it. I'd say use it if you're going to use it.
Let Tony finish his thought real quick, and then we'll jump over to we'll get your in, Steve. So, Tony, go ahead and finish your thought right there. I know you were trying to study in.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you're going to use it in mockery, I mean, that's how you should use it. It is a mocking term. It is linguistically correct, but if you're actually trying to consider your point of view, it's going to be productive.
Okay, Steve?
Yeah, well, it's one thing to have satire and stuff like that. I'm all for satire. My thing was, mockery doesn't really work in these types of dialogues very much. I mean, theists do it to atheists do it to theists. It gets nowhere. They're very base level things. Anybody can go on a video and start throwing out things like, oh, the theist sky daddy. It's not a really great form of argumentation. It is something that kind of parallel. Anybody can use it. Anybody can do it. It doesn't take any real forethought. It doesn't engage the theist at all. The theist is going to have the backfire effect. I just find it to be just no purpose for it whatsoever. And I say things to the theist as well. I mean, they say things that are just as equally just, oh, well, you know, atheists fall into scientism. Or atheists believe that the universe came from nothing. It's the same kind of thing. These are just base level things that people throw out there to try to get an emotional response. That's it. It doesn't add anything to the actual dialogue. That's my position.
Yeah. However, to those theists that you know can't be moved in their positioning, then sky daddy.
At that point, do what you got to do. I don't care. But I mean, I don't think it's literally correct. I mean, I know Ian and Parathis, I disagree on that. I don't think it's really a correct terminology. But again, for satire, for humor, whatever.
Let me get Dave's point of view real quick, and then I was just going to say,
and to a point, I agree with Steve, but at some point, if there's people out there that argue, like what Steve was saying, back and forth with that kind of stuff, sometimes you just get to a point where you got to say something that feels good to you.
I get that urge.
It can feel very good. You and your Sky Daddy keep getting in my bedroom, for example. It's just, that kind of.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's vacuous, sure, but it gets the point across that people are tired of it.
Well, this is going to bring up a new talking point, I think. And then once we get done with these two clips, we'll go to Tony and get his favorite clip. And Tony's actually going to read something that I was going to read to close us out. But I have to default to the most beautiful voice in the room. So Tony will be doing the closing ceremony.
If I can touch on the moral argument just for a second, because people that don't really know moral argument, it's one of those.
The first quarter of the way through.
What's that? You're breaking up, Kyle.
Briefly, because we're only the first quarter of the way through.
Oh yeah, no, I'm just going to say that it's one of the very few arguments where normally you argue like a specific premise, but both premises are bad in the moral argument. I mean, you could literally argue both of them. And that's unusual for an argument to be that. It's one of my least favorite arguments because it's just not a good argument because you can literally go to either premise and just annihilate either one. Right? Would you agree, EA?
The moral argument?
Yeah.
Moral argument. You would agree with what Steven said, right?
It's one of the weak. I mean, it's better than the pre-sub argument. But, I would definitely agree that it's one of the weaker ones.
Could you be wrong about
that? Wrong about what?
Could you be wrong about
that? Maybe. My brain may be in a vat. My brain might be in a vat. Yeah, I could be wrong. Yeah.
Check.
Yeah, my brain could be in a vat. It's all could be a simulation. It's probably not happening right now. It really doesn't matter yet.
Dave, go ahead and play. Let's go 2A and 2C. Actually, I'm sorry. 2B and 2C.
2B and 2C, let me cue it up.
Yeah, it should be 216, starting point. I didn't think I put enough stuff here for this show, but I feel like I put too much now. Too many bright minds.
This is progress.
So when I say, as the subtitle of my book, that I think religion poisons everything, I'm not just doing what publishers like and coming up with a provocative subtitle. I mean to say it infects us in our most basic integrity. It says we can't be moral without Big Brother, without a totalitarian permission. It means we can't be good to one another without this. We must be afraid. We must also be forced to love someone who we fear. The essence of sadomasochism. Not scorning the three delightful children who are everything to me and who are my only chance of even a glimpse of a second life, let alone an immortal one. And I'll tell you something, if I was told to sacrifice them to prove my devotion to God, if I was told to do what all monotheists are told to do and admire the man who said, yes, I'll gut my kid to show my love of God, I'd say no, fuck you.
Enough said.
That to me is a mic drop moment right there. And he has three of those that I put in this list that I just think he says everything that a normal thinking, normal loving parent would say about their kids. That if anything ever came and said that you needed to sacrifice your child, that would be the first instinct. And he has no qualms about letting you know that anything that would say that, fuck you. And we had an instance of this actually on the show the other night where Steve asked the guest the question, if God was to ask you to sacrifice your child, what would you do? And they said they would.
I got done saying what a great guy I was.
You are joking.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. We might as well say who it was. It was Cy.
But to be fair, he didn't have any kids. Now, I think that's going to play a big.
Oh, well, there you go. If you've never had kids, you can easily say something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. But even still, when I'm sitting there going, you know, I think Sai's a pretty decent guy as far as like having, you know, talks with him, and I think he really does believe all this stuff. But I don't think he really means any ill will toward anybody. And then he's like, yeah, you know, if God asked me to, but God wouldn't ask me to. I'm like, I think you're missing the bigger picture, right? Because I wouldn't kill my child for a deity either. But
and I think
what kind of God would ask that.
Yeah, on that point. Let me move over real quick.
As well, that he's not allowed to reproduce.
Fair enough.
Tony, do you want to set up the your clip and let us know what you chose and why you chose it? And then we will play. Dave, that's going to be the last one that I sent you.
All right. Well, the clip itself is it's from a Q&A after a debate with Al Sharpton, and which was a pretty decent debate. And, you know, Al Sharpton doesn't come across as a jerk in that one at all. So I it's actually a pleasant one to watch. But he's basically stating something that I've agreed with for a long time. He just put it in better words than I ever did. I've always told people that I'm more than happy to listen to you talk about religion. I'm fascinated by religion. When I grew up as a kid, I was reading up on mythology and religions from around the world. That's what I love. So I enjoy hearing those stories. I also don't even mind if you try to convert me. Just expect that I'm going to argue. And where I draw the line, though, is when you attempt to legislate your belief into my life, and then I have a problem with you. And that's essentially what he says, but in a much, much better way. So there you go.
Let's hear how he answers.
My question is to Christopher is, how you can justify wanting to take something away from people from 95 that gives meaning to 95% of the American people and replace it with something that gives meaning to just 5% of the American people?
Ah, well, what an incredibly stupid question. First, I've said repeatedly that this stuff cannot be taken away from people. It is their favorite toy, and it will remain so. As Freud said in The Future of an Illusion, it will remain that way as long as we're afraid of death and have no problem, which is, I think, likely to be quite a long time. Second, I hope I've made it clear that I'm perfectly happy for people to have these toys and to play with them at home and hug them to themselves and so on and share them with other people who come around and play with the toys. So that's absolutely fine. They are not to make me play with these toys. Okay? I will not play with the toys. Don't bring the toys to my house. Don't say, my children must play with these toys. Don't say, my toys might be a condom. Here we go again. I'm not allowed by their toys. I'm not going to have any of that. Enough with clerical and religious bullying and intimidation. Is that finally clear? Have I got that across? Thank you.
Brilliant.
He is. It's kind of funny to watch somebody that can be loved on both sides and answer the way that. I mean, he's the only one that can get away with an answer like that. I think, you know, like saying what a stupid question, and then going in and explaining. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
and seeing on Al Sharpton's face is total cognitive dissonance. Because he doesn't want to laugh and he doesn't want to agree with Christopher Hitchens.
He's got a smirk.
Everything Hitch is saying is absolutely spot on.
Yeah, he's laughing. Yeah, he's laughing at it.
But he probably hates the fact that he's laughing and he's punishing himself for it.
Tony was right. Al Sharpton was very not Al Sharpton in this debate. Right. He was very reasonable.
But you know him and Christopher were friends for years, so he just wanted to debate. Uh-huh. And basically, Christopher was promoting his book at that time, God Is Not Great. So that was one of his promotion tour dates. So Al just, if y'all know the backstory, I know Tony know the backstory. So Al was like, okay, I'll come and debate you. I'm going to promote my book, too, at the same time, make some money. So was a good debate.
That's all right. Yeah, he has a lot of Christian pastor friends. The guy, the book that I'm reading, He's the guy that does those. Christopher Hitchens had like three or four debates with the the FF Foundation. What's the name of it?
Freedom from Religion?
No, it's no, a... it's
there's the name of the debate. Foundation.
No, they sponsored the debate. It's a Christian organization. It's like the F Foundation or...
Oh, I know you're talking about. I can't anyway, name.
Anyway, they set up the debates, but he's a pastor at a church, and the guy that actually set up these debates is the guy that wrote this book. And him and Christopher Hitchens would like vacation out in they would go to Yosemite National Park together, and you'd have Christopher like going out and explaining wildlife to him. And then he said they would sit and have like theological discussions on like the book of Job and John for
Kyle,
hours.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
About that book, because I'm probably kind of noticing an elephant in the room for some people who are listening. I never bought that book purely because when the book came out, there was some media coverage about it. Mm-hmm. And about the author essentially trying to use Christopher's name to suggest that he had a deathbed conversion, which, of course, when you read Christopher Hitchens and listen to what he actually right. said on camera in his final days, he was literally right. warning people, look, there are going to be people who say I've had a deathbed conversion. I'm telling you, that is absolutely not the case. So I'm wondering right, how you can be reading this and thinking, actually it's a good book.
Well, Kyle, is that well, the it, case in that book right there?
No, I didn't read that at all in the book.
Maybe it's not in there. The media was wrong.
I think maybe what it could be is that because it's a pastor and the title of it is The Faith of Christopher Hitchens. Now, obviously I think what that is, it's a way to sell, you know, it's supposed to imply that he has some kind of faith, but that's not, there's nowhere that I have read that in any way indicates that he made any kind of deathbed confession
the day that he died, the very day that I got the news that he had died, I knew that there was going to be people saying that he had a deathbed confession, and I immediately went on YouTube and looked up places, and I found one place where they said he'd had a deathbed confession. And what he did, according to the story, is he called immediately for a priest and a minister to come to his bed, and he converted both of them to atheism.
Well, you know, there's that quote that I put up at the very beginning that said, if I do convert, it will be so that a believer dies instead of an atheist. So that was kind of a little jab that he put.
Oh, because I've lost my mind, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did.
So, yeah, I don't. So people did that with Stephen Hawking, too. There's actually a guy that is kind of. Well, I wouldn't say he's in this community, but he's close to this community. You know the Bible thumping weenut, don't you, Emperor Atheist?
Yeah.
You too, Tony, don't you? You know Bible thumping weenut.
They know Tim.
He released a video the day that Stephen Hawking died, saying that Stephen Hawking had made a deathbed confession. It was disgusting. I mean,
he got so much shit for it too. Even from theists, he got shit for it though. He backed off
and
that
so should
pretty
he.
Quickly.
Yeah, well, that seems so to be he. The leitmotif, though, in a lot of apologetics. I mean, if half of the movies that come out that are these in the kind of Christian wheelhouse, they tend to be stories about atheists who spend the entire movie talking about how they hate God, and then they get converted and then get into a car accident like the next day. And the whole drama is, oh, thank God he converted just the day before, because otherwise he'd be in hell right now. It's a leitmotif in that whole mindset.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. It's really pathetic, man.
Sad. Okay, so we just got Tony. Let's go with Dave. Let's go with the next clip, and then we'll get Lloyd's pick. And we're going to go with three. Let me see. Go ahead and do 3 A, B, and C, because it's only 2 minutes long.
Okay, that's easy. That means I just bring it back in.
You've made the worst concession already. You've already said you're a slave.
So,
well, absolutely.
After that, mere obedience to orders is a small offense.
I readily admit that I'm a slave. I'm a slave of the Lord Jesus Christ.
I'm glad of your chains.
Yeah, well...
It's absolutely fine for you, but you must leave me out of it. I don't want to be told that I have to obey these laws too, or that my children have to be taught this in school, or that laws have to be written to gratify the bizarre beliefs of a cult like yours.
So what if God actually exists, sir? Would he not have been good to you?
No. He wouldn't. Because if that were true, it would mean that I had an eternal supervising parent who would never die and let me get on with my life, never let me grow up, would keep me under surveillance.
But you have, sir.
And supervision every minute of my life.
But you
constantly
have.
Constantly ask me to be thanking and praising him.
Yeah.
I think it would be like living in North Korea. I think it would be a horrible outcome.
Well, not sure that God is Kim Jong-il, but what if what I said is true?
Well, ask Kim Jong-il, he has a different opinion.
How sure am I of my own views? Don't take refuge in the false security of consensus and the feeling that whatever you think, you're bound to be okay because you're in the safely moral majority.
I actually just had one small question, which is, Christopher, how are you feeling?
Oh, you get... Maybe you can go and stop it on that.
Somebody's got the stream up on this end
because it's is somebody in the call watching the chat or the stream?
In the full security of consensus.
Steve,
Emperor Atheist,
Emperor Atheist, your feed's coming through the speakers.
Oh, my fault.
That's okay. You have a surplus of pitch.
What happened to Tony? Tony, are you still with us? Okay, we'll see if we can't figure out what's going on with Tony. I wanted to read though real quickly, Lloyd, before we jump into your clip, that just on the back of this book. Just so if there's any questions out there, it says at the time of his death, Christopher Hitchens was the most notorious atheist in the world. Yet, while he rallied against God on stage, he maintained meaningful, though largely hidden from public view, friendships with evangelical Christians such as Francis Collins, Douglas Wilson, and the author Larry Alex Taunton. For the first time, Taunton reveals his intimate conversations with Hitchens and the questions that followed the man who was America's most convinced atheist, and as he went the day he died. So it does say that, you know, he went
good
as an atheist.
Well, I'm only going off what was. I know Hemant Mehta did an article on it on The Friendly Atheist. I read a few things at the time, and it seemed to imply that Taunton might be kind of milking a cash cow. As long
you
as
know
it's
what?
Been,
and he could be.
Been tastefully, then that's fine. I mean, I'm assuming you haven't got to the end yet.
No, I have not. I have not got to the
end
yet.
Right, okay. Well, let us know what happens.
But I hope that that it is not the case that he says that Chris Ridges does this with me doing this glowing review of it
sure.
prior. So far it's good. I mean, so far
that
it holds to the huh? Yeah, it would be. In all fairness though, I haven't got to the end, so I can only go based on the pages that I've gotten to people. So just hold your rabidness down.
I don't think anyone could be as emphatic as Christopher Hitchens was when it came to mitigating the potential for people to imply that he'd had a deathbed conversion.
Oh, sure.
He absolutely went over and above what was required to state emphatically that that wasn't possible.
And the thing is, like, people are going to want to do that with him because he was the number one atheist. And like, I think it'll be the same case with Richard Dawkins when he, you know, when he passes.
He's spoken about that as well.
Yeah, they'll flock to that. So, Lloyd, why don't you go ahead and set us up for your pick and why you chose it.
Okay, so I was going to pick another one. The one that I was going to pick is actually the one we're looking at on the screen right now. I actually think that this is my favorite example of Hitch on camera, because it's shortly before his demise, and he's talking in such a humorous, delightful way. Sam Harris is there, and there's just a great camaraderie on stage. And so this is personally, what we're looking at now is my is my personal favorite Hitch moment. But you asked me about the best kind of sound bite, the best Christopher Hitchens speech, and that's what we're going to see now.
Sure. Now, since this is kind of short, do you want to play what he says right here really, really quickly so that people can get a view, and then we'll play your clip?
I don't know how I would play it.
Not you, but just...
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah, Dave, will you press play? Dave, we're just going to play this one for like the first couple of seconds so that we can hear this, and then we're going to switch to Lloyd's clip.
So which one? Like,
we're going to play this one for like 10 seconds, and then we're going to switch over to Lloyd's real quick. Yeah, the one that's up now. Just go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Well, I'm dying, but but so are you.
if so. Okay, now we'll switch over to Lloyd's. Yeah, that's a good point. He touches on that too. I had pulled up some quotes. I don't think I wrote that one down though. But in Mortality, there are several references. Like I know one is. You ask the cosmos, why me? And the cosmos responds back to you, well, why not?
Yeah.
Which is very, you know, I love that, a very deep.
I love that clip as well where, you know, just so I can explain it, he's being interviewed on the street and he says, we're ejected from our mother's uterus as though towards a barn door with rusty nails in it or something like that. And he says, and that's our lot. And it's about using the time in between in as humorous and ironic a way as possible. And again, he put it in, his words were just perfect, but it was just the way he projected this philosophy in a way that was just so compelling and so sincere. And even if you disagreed with him, you couldn't help but think, gosh, he's got a point there, you know?
Very good point. Very well said. Okay, Dave.
Yeah.
You can go ahead and play, roll the clip.
Yeah, if I wasn't distracted by this dog and thunder, hold on.
Right, subsumed into a party that involved various other terrible mutations too. So I just have to defend myself, it seems to me, on these two matters. I'll close on the implied question that Bill asked me earlier. Why don't you accept this wonderful offer? Why wouldn't you like to meet Shakespeare, for example? I mean, I don't know if you really think that when you die you can be corporeally reassembled and have conversations with authors from previous epochs. It's not necessary that you believe that in Christian theology. And I have to say, it sounds like a complete fairy tale to me. The only reason I want to meet Shakespeare, or might even want to, is because I can meet him any time, because he is immortal in the works he's left behind. If you've read those, meeting the author would almost certainly be a disappointment. But when Socrates was sentenced to death for his philosophical investigations and for blasphemy, for challenging the gods of the city, and he accepted his death, he did say, well, if we are lucky, perhaps I'll be able to hold conversation with other great thinkers and philosophers and doubters too. In other words, that the discussion about what is good, what is beautiful, what is noble, what is pure, and what is true could always go on. Why is that important? Why would I like to do that? Because that's the only conversation worth having. And whether it goes on or not after I die, I don't know. But I do know that it's the conversation I want to have while I'm still alive, which means that to me, the offer of certainty, the offer of complete security, the offer of an impermeable faith that can't give way, is an offer of something not worth having. I want to live my life taking the risk all the time that I don't know anything like enough yet, that I haven't understood enough, that I can't know enough, that I'm always hungrily operating on the margins of a potentially great harvest of future knowledge and wisdom. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'd urge you to look at those of you who tell you, those people who tell you at your age that you're dead till you believe as they do. What a terrible thing to be telling to children. And that you can only live. And that you can only live by accepting an absolute authority. Don't think of that as a gift. Think of it as a poison chalice. Push it aside however tempting it is. take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way. Thank you.
It pisses you off.
It gives me tingles.
People like that are gone, yeah. I mean,
it gives me tingles.
He was taken way too soon. He was taken way too soon.
And incidentally, I'm drinking his favorite to
Johnny Walker.
Remember him.
No ice, right?
This is not, well, I have to have ice personally, but I can still enjoy the flavor. But no, this is a special moment for me, and that's why I'm glad that you invited me on the show. This speech, this clip that I've given you, encapsulates his significance to me as someone who experienced Christopher Hitchens when he was just coming out of a high control cult that had told me for my entire life that I was dead or would be dead soon if I didn't live my life according to their commands, according to their preachments. And then suddenly I'm confronted by this spectacle on my YouTube screen who is giving me nothing but common sense, who's saying, no, there's so much more beauty in what we don't know. In this, as he says, this huge harvest of knowledge that we're just on the brink of. Why not enjoy the fact that we don't know these things? Why bend our knee to these people who tell us at our age what we should know and what we should think? And this speech of Hitch's for me encapsulates his significance to me personally. And The magical thing, I think, is that he makes so much sense, and he was so good at speaking and so compelling, and still can put a tingle down my spine even now. He will continue to help people for years to come. People will continue to experience Hitch for the first time. People like me who are coming out of authoritarian, totalitarian ways of thinking, whether it's cults, whether it's political movements, Hitch is there on your YouTube screen, whether he's dead or alive, still dispensing these huge kind of bowlfuls of common sense. And that's why I'm grateful to him and always will be grateful to him, even though I never got a chance to meet him.
You know what? I wanted to say something too. That Hitch... Hitch, when in that clip he was speaking about William Shakespeare, he was like, well, you know, Shakespeare, he said, I would love to meet him. He said, Shakespeare is immortalized through his writings. And this is what I think about the Hitch, man. And even those who are going to come behind Hitch, I think through his writings, he's definitely immortalized. And I think, you know, we should try our best. You know, surely we probably would never be able to articulate like the Hitch, you know, or to be quick witted. But we should try to, you know, immortalize ourselves too. With what y'all doing with this show, things like that, we should try to do the same thing. Follow the same path that Christopher Hitchens has followed, man. You know, I mean.
And Kyle has already said it was Hitch that inspired him to do this. So he's having that effect.
So yeah. Kyle basically telling us he probably would still be believing, you know, in chickens. casting some type of eggs for the earth or something. If it wasn't for Hitch,
for that I have to thank Aaron Ra and Matt Dillahunty. I actually was in church at a youth group one night when a couple other people in the youth group were watching the Atheist Experience, and Matt Dillahunty and Aaron Ra were on, and they were making comments like, "Can you believe there's this, you know, this show called the Atheist Experience?" And I happened to Arn was talking about slavery in the Bible, and I remember going, slavery's not in the Bible. Like, that's not a thing, because you don't hear about that kind of thing, on the pulpit. So it bothered me, and I went home, and I pulled the episode back up, and I went back and watched it, and they were giving verses, and I was like, there's no way that's in there. It's not possible. Not the way that they're saying it. It's not there. It was there. And so for the next week, I was watching Arn Raw videos, and that's how I stumbled upon Christopher Hitchens by you know on the recommended side. Obviously that's going to pop up because it's tied together, but that's what it was so cool for me. And a lot of people like you know, say that I am a, you know, an Iron Rod champion. And I am. Like, he's like my hero because he, you know, he kind of brought me through that. So for him to, like, come on this show and, like, to have those kind of cool moments with him, it's kind of like meeting a Superman in a sense, because they wipe off that haze that you've had for years that's kept you from, like, actually living and, you know, making different decisions and wrong decisions most of the time. And thinking that things were bad when they're really not, or that things were okay when they're not, and vice versa. So, I have Arn to thank, but it was Hitchens that led me to this show, because I then got in through by watching the Hitchens debates. There were more debates that were shown on the suggested, because I had watched all of Hitchens, and that led me to the debates that happen in this community between, you know, people like Reds and all them. And so I wanted to do kind of a backstory on those guys. I wanted to do like a behind the music, like VH1 used to do, but I wanted to do it on the debaters. Like, I wanted to do something on their story, and it kind of morphed into what we do now. So, it's kind of cool to have the person that you watch or that you watch for so long and kind of guided you that kind of haze actually appear on your show. Like, you know, you're coming him to the thing that you're doing. It's kind of overwhelming sometimes. So I have to take a step back and be reminded.
I've had a very similar experience here. Yeah, I've had a similar experience, but not with Aaron Ra, but with Penn and Teller, specifically Penn Jillette. I live in Vegas. I don't know if you guys already knew that, but yeah, I live in Las Vegas, and so do Penn and Teller. They have a residency at the O here in Vegas, and they do a lot in the center here. In fact, they tried to sell a home at a discount price to the Atheists of Las Vegas, but because of Penn and Teller doing their show, you might have heard, called Bullshit, they did a bit about creationism, and of course they introduced they introduced Christopher Hitchens there, but of course they showed him constantly lighting a cigarette and drinking. And by the way, just so you know, I have Johnny Walker, but I'm kind of a lightweight, so I can't drink it straight. I have to have it mixed. But Penn Jillette told me a story that was really funny about Johnny Walker and Christopher Hitchens. I think he also told it somewhere else, but essentially Christopher Hitchens showed up at his door to visit and had a bottle of Johnny Walker. And Penn says, "I don't drink. I don't allow alcohol in my house." And Christopher says, "Are you going to stop me?" And that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, Penn Jillette is
that was a great voice, too.
It really was, man.
I'm looking forward to hearing you read that excerpt now. Lloyd, you were going to say something a second ago, too?
I was just going to say that if you're a believer watching this, and what you might be thinking at this point is, well, look at how they're treating men. Look at how they're treating humans. They're treating them as gods. They're treating them as heroes. And I would say that for me, Christopher Hitchens is a hero, but it's precisely because he's inspired me to think for myself. It's precisely because he's given me what turned out to be my mantra in life. And it's a quote that I mentioned to you on Facebook, Kyle. Seek out argument and disputation for their own sake. The grave will supply plenty of time for silence. That has turned into my mantra, because it's true. When you're dead, you no longer get to say anything. So you might as well say something now if you have something to say. Don't let anyone silence you. And that was a major message that Christopher Hitchens had for me. So I'm damn well going to call him a hero. It's better than calling some vicar or some cardinal or some bishop or some cult leader or some person who wrote a text thousands of years ago. It's better than calling them a hero. And when you go on Netflix or you watch some of these documentaries about science and what scientists are doing, and the effort that they are putting into pushing back the boundaries of our knowledge and trying to find out just slightly more about our universe. They're my heroes too. And I will never feel ashamed of treating humans as heroes, because they are improving my life experience in ways that religion never could.
Lloyd, by the way, you should
leave here and want to take on the world, guys, after watching this stream. Like, you should feel empowered enough to go move mountains when this is over.
It's not quite true that you don't have a voice after death. One word: soul phone.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. That's yeah.
And
by the way, I found out something very interesting, Kyle. I've been doing some research. I found out something interesting you might be not aware of. Dr. Gary Swartz, his wife is actually Rhonda Swartz. She's the host of Crossing Over from John Edwards' old TV show, remember?
Okay.
I shit you not.
Do you need any more proof of what I was saying then?
I'm still looking into this, but I want to do my own research.
Dear God.
I still think that Dr. Gary Swartz, I think he's just blind. However, Rhonda Swartz, I think she's full of shit. But again, shit. I'm looking independently. But isn't that weird that she is the medium? She discovered some psychic ability she had. And she was the host for Crossing Over, and she's married to a parapsychologist.
It's actually typical. I believe that. But we're gonna run through very quickly because we're running close on time. But I want to get to four B and C, and then after that, I'll tell you which ones to jump to. We've only got four more minutes left of these clips, guys, but they're important. And actually, the one that you just played, Lloyd, was the one that I was going to close on. So you picked a winner there, I think. Actually, all three of you picked a winner. In all actuality, everybody picked a winner, because you can't go wrong with a Christopher Hitchens moment. I mean, you just really can't. He made them every time he was on stage. But, Dave, let's go to 4B. Which is 7:14.
All right.
And let's hear what he says about an explanation for religion. These are going to be the last four quotes that we end on. And then Tony Reed's going to read an excerpt out of Mortality.
God speaks to some illiterate merchant warlord in Arabia, and he's able to write this down perfectly, and it contains the answers to all humans. Don't waste my time. It's bullshit.
But you're saying this,
Christopher. I've got to call you down on referring.
All right, Dave. Now you're going to want to go to 8:20.
I love that circumcision thing, though. That's hilarious. He absolutely pulls out this guy.
That was just intense, though. Like, like on another level.
Yeah.
For time, I'm trying to.
If you want to see, you can watch it. Yeah.
And do disgusting and wicked things, and you've just proved my point for that.
In error to say that AIDS is bad as a disease, very bad, but not quite as bad as condoms are bad, or not as immoral in the same way.
Francis Collins says... Right there. And the next part we're going to go to is 11:41. I played that clip because I think it's topical. We keep talking, or we talked earlier about the Muslim faith and how that is harmful and dangerous. And it is, but there's also an old character in this story, an old villain that has just been in the shadows lurking while the Muslim villain is getting all of the, you know, the number one hate from people. And that would be the Catholic Church, the one that's been there since the beginning. And in those shadows, we have discovered in the past couple of weeks just how dangerous they can be on a different level. And in some cases, on a worse level.
Yeah.
And that stops not only with the kids, but that also carries over into Africa, where you have millions of people who are suffering and dying because a guy in a funny hat and a cane deems condoms to be not of God. That contraceptives aren't godly, and that's disgusting. And they're watching people die for a doctrine that is meaningless. And I think that it's time to shift.
I actually think the debate debate against the Catholics was his best debate ever. I have my favorite Hitch moments on stage, and I have my favorite Hitch speech. But in terms of debates, I think he knocked that out of the park.
Stephen Fry as well. If you have not seen that, you need to watch Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry will like move you out of your seat. He brought it, that debate.
That was the London debate.
That was better than Christopher in the debate.
They both did excellent. But that was the London debate, and that was put on by Intelligence Squared. And the Catholic had put up probably the two worst possible representatives they could have ever put up, because they got annihilated. They even admit that they did really poor.
Well, they voted. You know, they had people vote before the
they were like rabbits and headlights. Yeah.
After and they lost. They lost. They lost, their people by the time that it was over.
The name of the debate was "Is the Catholic Church a force for good in the world?"
And of course, it's not. I know of no one that would say. I mean, I don't want to get on my soapbox. Well, that's not what this is about.
Well,
but I think it's important
to
draw a distinction to that, though, because don't let one become so far ahead as the number one villain that you're looking at that the other one is doing all of this sneaky shit off to the side.
And my small corner as well, Jehovah's Witnesses, if they're causing misery in people's lives, it's not a competition of how many members they have or even necessarily how many countries they can manipulate. We need to stop this nonsense of theocrats dictating people's lives in whatever guise that comes in.
Exactly right. All right, let's go to 11:41.
Well, could they annihilated him. I mean, the biggest thing they had was the AIDS and the condoms. I think that's where Fry and Hitchin basically just annihilated the Catholic representatives.
And the fact that
because
the
they had no
gay.
They had no. Yeah, they well. I mean, so but he also thinks that celibacy is not something that's normal or natural, and they really had no retort to that.
Of course, it's not. All right, here we go. This one right here is this is my favorite, my personal favorite line that he has right here.
Evangelicals say to me, "But you don't understand. We have a mission for you. You need to be saved. What shall I answer them?"
God, well, I mean, the second bit of the question is very easy to answer. I mean, tell them to fuck off.
Let's look at...
All right, Dave, now we're going to go to 1208. And it's going to go from 1208 to 1241, and that'll be the last one.
Another example. There's a place called the Oasis here in Sydney. It's a shelter for young homeless people. It was at the heart and soul of this place. There's a Salvation Army captain called Paul Moulds and his wife. Now, they're non-judgmental as far as I can see. They don't seem to be pushing their religion. Essentially, they practice their faith by helping others. So can that be poisonous?
No, but in what sense in that case is it religious? Again, you're saying these people are so nice, they're hardly religious at all.
Brilliant.
That's one of his best, too. I mean, he makes a good point. You know, he makes a very good point. Well, I'm going to thank these gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for coming on. This was fantastic. I cut out about half of the Hitch slaps that I had just for time. Like I said, I thought that I didn't have enough on there, that I was going to be pushing it for time, but I'm gonna have to get more. Let me say it this way: less intelligent people next time if I want a quicker show. So, bravo, well done. Go ahead and talk about your channels one more, or let people know about your channels, and then we're gonna let Tony Reed take us out with an excerpt from Hitchin's Mortality. But
let me get a super chat.
Sorry, I didn't even think about that. My bad.
Yep. Real quick, I only had two, but they were good ones. Thank you. Bram SLI1, because I love you all and I love the Hitch, I so wish we still had him with us. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. And Arnie, he says, for the goosebumps I got, thanks for the tribute to Hitchens. And that was 200 Norwegian krones, which I think is like $25. But thank you very much, Arnie. We appreciate that.
Norwegian krones. I like that. Wait a minute.
Is that what it is? I know. I don't know what they're called. I mean, I look like an idiot. NOK, isn't that Norwegian Crohn's? Or am I don't know.
I hope it's not Crohn's, because Crohn's disease is where you, like, you have irritable bowel syndrome. Well,
yes, it is
Crohn's. Not given. NOK. Okay, because how so
gives it, you know, any diseases, please, over YouTube. That would be great.
They actually call them Crohn's, but they actually call them Crohn's, but it is a Crohn.
Okay.
Crohn's.
Okay. Ah, good to know.
Learn something new every day. Well, thank you guys for that. And now let's let Emperor Atheist chill out.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Y'all can find me over at Emperor Atheist channel, man, and Instagram, Alex Legend. That's my real name. I don't really hide that. And Facebook, Alex Legend, Alexander Legend. So y'all make sure y'all hit my channel up. And my other show that I have, Three Black Heathen Show. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and so forth with Nate Brody and Dragnar.
And what day is your Three Black Heathens on so they can catch you
Three
live?
Black Heathen. The podcast is every Sunday. We're just going once a week right now. It's 8 o'clock p.m. every Sunday. So y'all can catch us every Sunday, 8 o'clock p.m.
And I recommend catch me. And definitely go check it out because it's a great show. I love it. And if you haven't seen the episode with Emperor Atheist where he comes on with Nate Brody and talks about it, check that out as well. Okay, Mr. Reed. Actually, Mr. Reed, we'll let you go last so you can just jump in straight into the excerpt. Sorry to get you excited right there for a second and then take it away from you. I hate that. All right, Lloyd. Whenever you're ready, sir.
Hello. My name is Lloyd Evans. I am a former Jehovah's Witness, writer, and activist. My YouTube channel is John Cedars. Please check that out. It's where I dissect lots of nonsense that comes out of the Jehovah's Witness religion. So if you want to know quite how bad it gets when it comes to the cultiness of Jehovah's Witnesses, that's the place to check out. I also have a book out called The Reluctant Apostate, which is on Amazon. But thanks so much for having me on, guys. It's been an absolute blast.
I need to start calling it that Amazon.
Like Amazon.
David, do you want to let people know about what you've got going on Sundays?
On Sundays, if we get around to it, Mr. Vito D'Amico and myself have a show called Bring Your Best. We go into debunking a different kind of nonsense than religion. It is about scary stuff. We see, okay, how scary are these scary videos that are out there? We try to go through. And we try to be unbiased, but most of what we find is, quite frankly, incredible, or incredible in a bad way, I mean. Or simply obvious fakery or acting. So,
Dave, you know what you should do really quick? You should get one of those zombie videos where it plays like this, like, very boring thing for like the first 20 seconds, and then the zombie like screeches out at you. You should play that for Vito and get his reaction live on camera.
maybe I might do that. I don't
all right, once again, thanks to all these guys. We're gonna let Tony Reed close us out by telling us about his channel and then reading two parts from Christopher Hitchens' book, which today is 6 years published. It published on August the 25th of 2012, and take it away. There it is right there. Take it away, Mr. Reed.
All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Tony Reed. I have a channel that is called Tony Reed, and I have a show that is called How Creationism Taught Me Real Science. If you ever have any debates with any creationists and you want to have the tools you need to show that the scientific data is on your side, I thoroughly reference every one of my videos. All I ask is don't just watch the first 30 seconds and then call me a moron. Watch at least 2 minutes of it before you think I'm a moron. It's because I state the creationist site first exactly as they would state them. And they sound ridiculous because they are ridiculous. So just stick with it. Unfortunately, recently I've had this rash of people commenting on my videos telling me what an idiot I am and what an idiot creationist I am. And And then I got to spend the next couple of weeks going, but wait, I'm not a creationist. I'm doing it.
So in a nutshell, if they think you're an idiot and you're a moron, make sure that you comment, "I've watched the whole video," and then you're an idiot and a moron, right? That's better.
That doesn't work. They'll just, people've seen enough. I mean, yeah. I don't blame them. I would watch the first 30 seconds of one of my videos and go, "Nah, I'm not watching this. This is dumb."
I get called a theist all the time. Maybe the other day somebody's thinking I'm a theist for some reason. I don't know why. Whenever I ever said I was a theist.
All right, so you're going to have to forgive me. I'm going to try to do this as much sounding like Chris as I can, simply because his cadence is perfect for it. I try to read it in my own accent. It just sounds stupid. But this is a hard one for me to get through because it actually is more moving than I expected. Hopefully we can mortality. I have not actually read the book. So I am, this is actually while we've been doing this, I actually have ordered the book. So I'm now forced to read it because this actually kind of moved me already. So here we go, my friends. I have more than once in my time woken up feeling like death. But nothing prepared me for the early morning in June when I came to a consciousness feeling as if I were actually shot on corpse. The whole cave of my chest and thorax seemed to have been hollowed out and then refilled with slint. I could faintly hear myself breathe but could not manage to inflate my lungs. My heart was beating either too much or too little. Any movement, however slight, required forethought and planning. It took strenuous effort for me to cross the room of my New York hotel and summon the emergency service. They arrived with great dispatch and behaved with immense courtesy and professionalism. I had the time to wonder why they needed so many boots and helmets and so much heavy backup equipment. But now that I view the scene in retrospect, I see it as a very gentle and firm deportation, taking the country of the well across the stark frontier that marks off the land of malady. Within a few hours, having had to do quite a lot of emergency work on my lungs, the physicians at this sad border post had shown me a few other postcards from the interior and told me that my immediate next step would have to be with an oncologist. Some kind of shadow was throwing itself across the negatives. The notorious stage of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, by one progresses from denial to rage through bargaining to depression and the eventual bliss of acceptance, hasn't so far had much application to my case. In one way, I suppose I have been in denial for some time, knowingly burning the candle at both ends and finding that it often gives a lovely light. But for precisely that reason, I can't see myself smiting my brow with shock or hear myself whining about how it's all so unfair. I have been taunting the Reaper into taking a free scythe in my direction, and now have succumbed to something so predictable and banal that it bores even me. Rage would be beside the point for the same reason. Instead, I am badly oppressed by the growing sense of waste. I had real plans for my next decade, and I felt I'd worked hard enough to earn. Will I really not live to see my children married? To watch the World Trade Center rise again? To read, if not indeed to write, the obituaries of elder villains like Henry Kissinger and Joseph Ratzinger? But I understand this sort of non-thinking for what it is, sentimentality and self-pity. Of course, my book hit the bestseller list the day that I received the grimace of news bulletins, and for that matter, the last flight I took as a healthy-feeling person was the one that made me a million-miler on American Airlines, with a lifetime of free upgrades to look forward to. But irony is my business, and I just can't see any ironies here. Would it be less poignant to get cancer on the day that my memoirs were remaindered as a box office turkey, or that I was bounced from a coach class flight and left on the tarmac? To the dumb question, why me, the cosmos barely bothers to return a reply. Why not?